The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Hey there, if you're listening to this and you support us on Patreon, you can hear it via the Patreon page ad-free. You're listening to Sound Opinions, and this week we share our favorite songs about work. I'm Jim DeRogatis.
And I'm Greg Kot. But first, we have some new music to review.
I got that gin in my system.
That is a little bit of a track called Gin in My System from the new Big Frida album, Central City. New Big Frida album, Greg. Freddie Ross Jr. of New Orleans has not made a new album since his debut in 2014. Mm-hmm. And plenty of people have been waiting because, as Big Frida, his onstage alter ego, I said his, he's ambivalent about pronouns. His, her, he calls himself the queen of bounce music, and has a very open attitude. Is you know, out as a flamboyant gay man, but you know, says it doesn't matter what pronoun you use for me. You know, he emerged as I guess really the figurehead of this bounce sound, this irresistible, uplifting New Orleans brand of hip hop. Since then, Big Frida has had a reality TV show, has, you know, the list of people who've sampled him, it's topped by Beyonce, but other collaborators, Lizzo, Kesha, New Kids on the Block, Jordan Sparks, Drake, everybody wanted a little bit of bounce over the last 15 years that Big Frida's been off the stage, and you call up Big Frida, who is a wonderful personality and a great talent, that rich, deep baritone voice and the sound of New Orleans today. What is Frida giving us on this new album, only the second of a great career, Central City? Let's play a track. We'll come back and give our opinions. I was twisting your arm to play this. I know musically you love it. I also love it conceptually. We always got to give the drummer some, right?
Sure.
Booty Like a Drummer by Big Frida.
Motorbike boy popping wheelies all summer. A big booty Benz and a booty like a drummer. A booty like a drummer. Booty like a drummer. She got a booty like a drummer. Booty like a drummer. She got a big booty.
That is Booty Like a Drummer from Big Frida's new album, Central City. Big Frida, boy, rhythm forward, right? That's New Orleans bounce.
Oh, man.
So Big Frida is like the second generation of New Orleans bounce. It really started in the early 90s. Big Frida came along about a decade later. and carried it forward. And it's been an amazing thing to see this mushroom from sort of a very regional type of sound into the mainstream.
You know, yeah, and it's sad that that never happened to Washington, D.C. go-go, mm-hmm. right? Because that was a fantastic sound that I think had a lot in common as a predecessor to bounce.
And Big Frida's very open about the source material for this music. I mean, people like DJ Jimmy and DJ Jubilee in the early 90s really invented this sound. And this is a record that says, hey, bounce is still relevant with higher production values. If you listen to some of those early bounce tracks, very much raw club music, and there was a reason they didn't, you know, burst into the mainstream, because they weren't designed for that.
Higher
they
production
were designed for a sweaty club. You
yeah,
know?
Yeah. Higher production, and any guest who Frida reached out to, Sierra's on this album, Faith Evans, Lil Wayne.
Well, they have, you know, actual songs. You know, it's like that's a kind of a move forward as well. Songs. It was so rhythm forward that, you know, the hooks were minimal. But now we got lots of hooks on this record, especially with the guest vocalists, as you mentioned. So you do have those minimalist rhythm forward party tracks, but and it is very much a street corner record, but it's produced in a way that you could listen on headphones to the level of detail in the production that hasn't been there before. So I do love this album. You know, there's some life lessons in here too. You know, the life lessons being the name of one of the tracks. It's a tribute to Big Frida's mom. I was a choir girl and a mama's boy, and basically saying, Mom, you took care of everything about me.
Yeah, you know, every side of my personality.
Yeah. Party album, but there's also some doomy industrial kind of vibes in some of the arrangements, and those pop hooks, the unhinged joyousness of bounce coming through. You know, if you haven't heard of Big Frida, you really ought to get some in your life, you know?
We've been a fan for quite a long time. Yeah. You know, look, there are some obvious toss-offs here. I can't not mention Pepto Interlude, which takes the old Pepto-Bismol jingle.
Noise, your heartburn, indigestion, upset stomach, diarrhea. Noise, your heartburn, indigestion, upset stomach, diarrhea.
And throws in the Tums jingle as well.
Right.
I got cramps, Frida says, right? And it's like, oh, okay. But, you know, whether Frida is just having fun or whether he or she is talking about issues of substance, and there are these pointed comments on occasionally. They're just thrown in about the fate of New Orleans, the ongoing racism in New Orleans, mm-hmm. and the LGBTQ plus prejudices that are spreading throughout America. Frida says, I want you all to remember that I can get tough when I need to be tough. Don't take the nails and the hair lightly. So occasionally these bursts of anger, but mainly humor and mainly party. Greg, I'm so glad we reviewed this album this week. I'm about to go back to school. Right.
Yeah.
Remember what that was like? It's been a long time. You know, the late August, September dread. And don't get me wrong. I love teaching. But, you know, I got to get up. I got to get dressed. I got to, you know, it's like, man, I got to go to work. Right.
Yeah. Well, you got a few weeks of street festivals left. You know, you can go out and party to this record. Right?
Well, I've been partying all week listening. You know, I am so glad Frida's back. Have you got thoughts about Big Frida? Leave a message on our Facebook page or our website. We'd love to play it on the show. When we return, we'll share some of our favorite songs about work. That's coming up on Sound Opinions. And we are back. And this week, we take a moment to honor Labor Day by playing songs about work. I think, Greg, people just think, well, it's the end of the summer holiday. Let's remember what this was really about. You know, and we're recording this or augmenting earlier picks as the Writers Guild and the Screen Actors Guild are out on strike, shutting down Hollywood, and in many other areas of employment in this country, organized labor is more front of mind than it's been in a very long time. But even before these current strikes, labor was making a comeback with the efforts at Amazon and Starbucks all over the country, you know, with teachers during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a long tradition, labor in this country, and the labor people organize because work. Right. Now, you and I have been pretty lucky, and so have our producers, Andrew and Alex and Sol. Never feels like work making this show. But we can't say that about people as we record with a 115-degree heat index in Chicago. People out there digging holes and hauling goods and going to schools that don't have air conditioning. Man, I actually... When we talked about this subject, I broke into song last week. I think startling you, Alex, Andrew, Sol. You know, a song that has stuck with me from when I was doing the math, 8 or 9 years old I would have been, and it ran for several years as a commercial on New York area TV. Do you remember "Look for the Union Label"? Did you get it in upstate New York?
You know, I was living in, because that was early, like late 70s, early 80s, right?
It was 80s into the early 90s.
Yeah, so I was in the Midwest by that time. I was in Chicago. I probably had heard it. And for some reason, when you did sing it in your dulcet tones, it came flashing back to me like I must have heard that at some point. You know, it's one of those things that gets burned in your subconscious and you can never really get rid of it.
It was a fascinating story. I had to dig up the history of this. The International Ladies Garment Workers Union, you know, decided to record 4 commercials with this incredible jingle. I think this is the first in Sound Opinion's history that I'm playing a commercial jingle.
Yeah.
But it's such a great song. And it has since been covered by a number of Americana and punk bands. None of them are as good as the original. There was a woman, Paula Green, you know, who grew up in a Jewish in a labor family in New York after they moved from Los Angeles. And she has proudly cited a number of awards, naming this one of the greatest advertising campaigns of all time. She wrote the words, and she got together with a musician who wrote the jingle itself, who was the ILGWU's chorus director. He'd earlier been in a doo-wop group. Mm-hmm. Greg, your favorite genre, the Tune Drops, right? And, you know, this is airing all the time on New York area television at a point where America is blissfully oblivious to the fact that 60 or 70% of the workforce is women.
Mm-hmm.
And here we have these rousing choruses from these women who want you to remember that when you, quote, are buying a coat, dress, or blouse, somewhere are union sewing. My favorite line, though, I mean, there's only five, six lines. We work hard, but who's complaining?
Mm-hmm.
Who's complaining? That's such a New York way. You know, it stuck with me because when I went to NYU, one of the buildings on campus was the site of the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory.
Mm-hmm.
In 1911, that factory of 98% women and girl workers burned to the ground, 146 dead. And it was a galvanizing moment for calls for greater safety for workers and union activists. Anyway, you know, hey, I'm from a union family.
Mm-hmm.
I always love this song. Didn't sew shirts, dresses, or blouses, but here it is.
Look for the union label when you are buying a coat, dress, or blouse. Remember somewhere a union sewing, a wage is going to feed the kids and run the house. We work hard, but who's complaining? Thanks to the ILG, we're paying our way. So look for the union label. It's there to make it work.
Doesn't that make you want to sing?
It does, and it leads very nicely into my first song about work, because it's Margot Price's Pay Gap. I mean, what do unions exist if not to address the pay gap? This is a song from her 2017 album, All American Made, her second album, where she kind of looks out in the world and says, you know, here's, you know, the first one about Midwest farmer's daughter and talking about her life on a farm, growing up on a farm in Western Illinois. And now she's talking about the world at large and what we see there. And, you know, the idea of a song about sex discrimination and wages, I mean, it doesn't sound like a lot of fun, but, man, there's some feistiness in Margot's interpretation here, you know. She's got some great lines in this song. We're all the same in the eyes of my God, but in the eyes of rich white men, I'm no more than a maid to be owned like a dog. Putting it right on the line. You know, if you're a person of color, if you're a woman, chances are, if you're not, unless you're represented by a union, you're probably going to get the short end of the pay at any place you work. And she certainly experienced that. You know, we had her on the show a couple of times, and she told us about those dead-end jobs.
Yeah.
One after another that she was working, you know?
Hey, it's not just dead end. I can talk about a media company in Chicago that paid the female editors much less than the men.
Up and down, exactly, up and down the line. You know, but here's a working woman, Margot Price. She's speaking about firsthand experience here. And at the same time, there's a lightness of touch in this song. You know, that Tex-Mex kind of coloring in the song is sort of gives you a little bounce to your step here. So Margot Price's Pay Gap on Sound Opinions.
Honey, I work so hard for my money, and I leave my babies at home, breaking my back trying to bring home a check, and working my fingers to the bone. At the end of the day, feels like a game, one I was born to lose. And this institution and dead revolution is giving young women
that is Margot Price with Pay Gap, getting us going for songs about work.
Well, you know, similarly, Greg, two decades or and change earlier, Dolly Parton got there. You know, we can't do this show and not play 9 to 5. What a fantastic song this was. And Dolly scored a hat trick with it. Number one country hit, number one adult contemporary, number one on the Billboard Hot 100. Doing that in 1980 with a song about women being mistreated in the workplace, it was still revolutionary at that date. You know, it's enough to drive you crazy if you let it, Dolly sang. She wrote this herself for the film 9 to 5. You know, she was in it with Lily Tomlin and Jane Fonda. It was her film debut. And from that movie and this song, grew the popularity of an organization called 9 to 5. It had formed in 73, but this really put it front and center, whose aim was to bring about fair pay and equal treatment for women in the workplace. A couple of notes of trivia. Senator Elizabeth Warren, when she was running for president, was using this as her theme song, and Dolly's manager didn't want anybody to claim this song. And that typewriter sound in the beginning, you remember the typewriter clicking and clacking?
Right.
That is actually Dolly drumming her acrylic fingernails on the recording desk.
Oh, that's cool.
I love that. Dolly was working, and she was getting the work on tape. Here is 9 to 5 by Dolly Parton from 1980.
Watch him shatter. You're just a step on the boss man's ladder, but you got dreams he'll never take away. In the same boat with a lot of your friends, waiting for the day your ship will come in and the tide's gonna turn and it's all gonna roll your way. Working out. Getting by, it's all taken and no giving. They just
9 to 5. It's, you know, it's so jaunty. That was, you know, the big hit from her album, 9 to 5 and Odd Jobs, which is not as good overall as this. I mean, the single's amazing, right? Mm-hmm. But there's some bad tracks, including Dolly doing a cover of one of your all-time favorite songs, The Animals' House of the Rising Sun.
Oh, yeah.
And it's got bad 80s synth in it and choruses of women singing behind it. That
production screwed up a lot of 80s records, let me
tell you. Bad production, yes. But speaking of The Animals, you got an Animals song, Greg.
You know, when I was researching this particular song, it was interesting because it was by a group from the early 60s, The Animals. And on the inner sleeve of the particular album, they gave one of those little Tiger Beat outlines, you know, your favorite color is, and, you know, if you weren't a musician, you'd be. And they listed the former occupations of the Animals, and these were true working class guys out of Newcastle, you know, the north of England, where if you weren't somebody famous, you would end up working in a factory, probably. So you were looking at Eric Burdon, and he lists his former occupations as postman and draftsman and laborer. And there was another one that was an instrument maker, another one who was an income tax officer, another who was a machinist. These guys grew up in a blue-collar town and were consigned to blue-collar lives. So this song really hits home for me. It hits home personally for this band as well, and I think that's why they invested so much in it. Even though it was not originally written by them, it was originally written by Barry Mann and Cynthia Weil, two of the great songwriters out of the Brill Building in New York. But The Animals changed some of the lyrics to personalize them and make them more applicable to their upbringing. When they were talking about the dirty old heart of the city, they were talking about Newcastle, and they were talking about their old man sitting there, a broken down relic of what he used to be because he had been a blue-collar laborer his entire life. And the whole notion of, you know, we got to get out of this town. We got to get out of this place.
Yeah.
You know, get on to a better life. Be a rock and roll band because we don't want to work for a living. It's one of the main reasons to be in a rock and roll band. So here it is, The Animals. We got to get out of this place on Sound Opinions. That is The Animals, We Gotta Get Out of This Place. What a song. Still holds up pretty well. Can be used in many different contexts, but certainly about, you know, you can just see somebody at a dead-end job singing that song. What's your next pick, Jim?
Well, Mr. Cott, you know, it seems to me that many of our holidays are robbed of their original meaning. I mean, Labor Day initially was a day to celebrate union people. You know, we forget about that. It's just like end of summer is a holiday, right? But it means something still in America, I think, to be a blue-collar union member. And I think the song that celebrates that best was written by a Brit, you know, looking in at our society in 1970. The first John Lennon solo album, John Lennon Plastic Ono Band. I'm talking, of course, about Working Class Hero. In the interview he gave to Rolling Stone magazine at the time, that famous chat, he said, you know, this is a song for the revolution. You know, John still believed in it at that point. This is celebrating the working man who is being beaten down. If he can't assimilate and become part of the machine, the middle class, the capitalistic dream, he's beaten down into submission. An extraordinary statement. The music really drives home the lyrics, you know, that stomping beat, working hard and being beaten into submission at the same time. They've tortured and scared you for 20 odd years, then they expect you to pick a career. Lennon was a bitter man. Even though he had succeeded, he never forgot that Liverpool working class mentality. He didn't want that. A working class hero is something to be. That's what his take on it was. Here it is on Sound Opinions.
A working class hero is something to be. A working class hero is something to be. When they've tortured and scared you for 20 odd years, when they expect you to pick a career. When you can't really function, you're so full of fear.
Working Class Hero from John Lennon, one of Jim DeRogatis' picks as a great song about work. I couldn't agree more, Jim. First couple of songs we played here, kind of dark, you know?
It's a little bit.
Not a happy thing if you're a working man sometimes.
Well, work is not a happy thing, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I'm going to play a song next that actually celebrates the working class life, at least to a degree. It's a song called Cleaning Windows by Van Morrison, in which he was looking back on his young life as a teenager growing up in Belfast in Ireland, early 60s. You know, he's a day laborer, cleaning windows, you know, lunch break, you know, lemonade and buns, smoking cigarettes, and daydreaming about his next life, about the life that he wanted to live, and that was a life of art, a life surrounded by music and books. He was name-dropping people like Muddy Waters and Jimmy Rogers and Lead Belly and Jack Kerouac in this song. He was a guy who had to pay the bills, working his job, and he was going to do darn well at it. He wasn't going to shirk on cleaning windows. He was going to do that to the best of his abilities. But what he really wanted to do was play saxophone in the band that he was playing with at night and later on forge a career out of it. So you can hear Van at an early stage in his life thinking about the future, even as he was a proud working man on cleaning windows. Van Morrison on Sound of Blues.
I heard Lead Belly and Blind Lemon on the street where I was born. Yeah. Sonny, Brandon McGee, I'm Muddy Waters singing, I'm a rolling stone. I went home and read my Christmas Humphrey's book on Zen. Curiosity killed the cat, Kerouac storm of bumps, and on the road.
Van Morrison, cleaning windows. A man finding joy in his work. Cleaning windows. I can enjoy this job because I'm a working man in my prime. I love that song.
Too little joy from Van Morrison over the last few decades.
That song is celebratory, Van. I love that sound. What's your next pick, Jim?
Greg, I'm going to a Chicago artist that you and I both were huge fans of, circa his first major label album, Blue Collar, in 2006. I am, of course, talking about Che, named for Guevara, Smith, otherwise known as Rhymefest. Mm-hmm. When Rhymefest recorded Blue Collar, he had had a series of day jobs that included bus driver, janitor, prison guard for a highway cleanup crew, and counselor at a daycare center. When he was the highway guard, he said it was all white guys, and they hated it. I felt like Colin Powell. Very funny man, Rhymefest. A lot of people don't know, and it is not on the streaming services, that while he was making his major label debut in 2006, propelled in large part by having written Jesus Walks for Kanye West, right? And then he went on to co-write Glory with Common and John Legend, a big hit, signature song from 2014's movie Selma.
Mm-hmm.
He had already had an indie debut, long forgotten, and he's only had two formal albums and hasn't been heard from since on record, although he's a really busy activist in Chicago. Ran unsuccessfully for alderman, but came in second. Runs a charity that educates young Chicago kids in the arts, and, you know, in 2006, David Cameron, then the Prime Minister of England, called him over to the House of Commons to talk about hip-hop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Rhymefest is so eloquent, he does great. Anyway, his actual debut was an album called Raw Dog. And it had an underground hit that first put him on our radar, I think, Good Blank Job. Mm-hmm. Okay? And he was very generous on this track. Gives the first verse to Kanye and the second to Mikey Halstead. Then he comes on strong, Rhymefest, with verse 3. His theme has always been about jobs, about fantasizing about having better jobs, about would I be better off as a gangster if I didn't have to work. And he talks about having worked at Steak and Shake, mm-hmm. right? I have to explain for our listeners across the country. You know, Steak and Shake is mainly a Midwestern chain, right?
Right, right.
Once a year, my old colleague and friend Roger Ebert would write a column about Steak and Shake is the best restaurant in the world. You know, it's just like the steak burger and the shake,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah. It is good.
It's a darn good fast food stop on the highway. You know, and Rhymefest with his typical sense of humor. And we used to work at the Steak and Shake 30 hours a week talking about get them fries, turn the meat. Ain't nobody who has worked as a short order cook who can't relate. Rhymefest with good blank job.
I used to work at Steak and Shake 30 hours a week. Digging, ain't even supervisors trying to act like they cheap. Talk about get them fries, nah, turn the meat. Sounded like a bitch, hit him in his mouth and quit. Try to picture this. King on a slave ship, working the grave shift, and ain't even made it. My crooked ass trucker put me up on the lift. Drop grease, then slip, get insurance, take trips, sell woman, set it up. Get with shorty in the front, I was skimming off the register. Now I change up the and do it my way. Don't get caught on camera on your off day like Ice Cube on Friday. If I worked in the law, I'd be selling coogies out the back. Got a gig at Blockbuster, selling movies out my lap. Any job that I'm at, I'm getting goofies for they stack. If the supervisor comes,
That's a little bit of Rhymefest talking about work, right? Mm-hmm. Now we want to hear from you. What are your favorite songs about work? Leave a message on our website so we can play your pick on the show. Coming up, a few more songs about work, and Greg adds a song to the Desert Island Jukebox.
Don't you know?
That's the sound of the men working on the chain.
The time to rise has been engaged. Your better best to rearrange. I'm talking here to me alone. I listen to the finest work song. The finest hour.
Welcome back to Sound Opinions. I'm Greg Kotz, and we're celebrating Labor Day with songs inspired by the idea of work. And that, of course, is REM with Finest Work Song. Jim, what's your next pick?
Greg, as we've said, dozens and dozens of great choices in this genre. I had a list. I was having a hard time narrowing it down, and then I realized I can't do this show and not do The Clash. These guys really knew about the drudgery of working, the jobs that were being offered them in the mid-70s to keep them off the dole, mm-hmm. England's version of unemployment. None of them were very appealing. Mick Jones had actually worked for the British government opening mail to make sure there weren't letter bombs that were going to blow up some bureaucratic official. That's a line in this song. I hate the civil service rules. I won't open letter bombs for you. Joe Strummer hated the Army. He hated the RAF. Hated basically every job that was being offered to him as a young man in Thatcherite England. Anyway, this is a song that cheers you up just because of the sheer adrenaline of it. Yeah, it's a bad situation. I got no job. I got no prospects. I got no career opportunities. But The Clash somehow make it celebratory. From that wonderful first self-titled Clash album, Career Opportunities on Sound Opinions.
Opportunity, the one I never knock. Every job they offer used to kick you off the dock. Career opportunity, the one I never knock.
The Clash with Career Opportunities. Greg, you've got another one. What are you going to play?
Jim, there is a poetry in writing about anything well, and I think one of the great poets in writing about the working man was Bob Marley, specifically in a song called Night Shift that he released in 1975. It was a very personal song for Marley. A lot of people may not realize that he spent quite a bit of time in the United States. He came here as a teenager from Jamaica to find work, and to Delaware specifically, and ended up working on an assembly line at the Chrysler plant. the late shift, the midnight shift. It was an interesting time in his life and disorienting on a number of levels. First of all, you've got this Jamaican kid being caught up in a Delaware winter. And secondly, the whole notion of being up in the middle of the night when the rest of the world is asleep and then coming out into the sunlight and realizing your day is ending. So there was a sense of disorientation that I think he captured perfectly in this song. He was talking about the notion of working hard for a living. He was talking about the whole idea that this is the only way I can eat. I have to do this. And at the same time, this notion of this is about as tough as it gets, you know, having to work hard labor in the middle of the night when the rest of the world is blissfully unaware of what you're doing. Here it is, Night Shift from Bob Marley on Sound Opinions.
Night shift, working on a night shift with the forklift from AM.
If you say that, why did you say that?
To PM,
working on
night. Working on a night shift, yeah.
Why did you say that?
Night Shift, Bob Marley from 1975, a great song about work. Jim, what do you got next?
You know, Greg, good point about Marley being a poet of the often mundane or the minor details in life. But I think the guy who won the all-time award for that in rock history was Lou Reed. He certainly wrote songs about dramatic things, you know, on the very first Velvet's album, sadomasochistic sex, heroin, etc. It seems like we always choose a Lou Reed song when we do these kinds of shows. In part, Greg, because I think Lou Reed wrote about everything. During his long career, Greg, he made poetry of mundane things, as well as very dramatic things. And he wrote two great songs about work. One was on the Songs for Drella, talking about how Andy Warhol's attitude toward making art was that it's work, just work, 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 right?
Mm-hmm.
But also, my favorite is on Legendary Hearts in 1983, Don't Talk to Me About Work. Mm. Now, this was the second of those albums that Reed made with the incredible guitarist Robert Quine, who died in 2004. The best musical pairing he had, apart from John Cale. The music was incendiary, and Reed was inspired. He was newly sober. He realized at that point that he'd been lucky to never have to work, and he never wanted to. He connected with the people that had to. Don't talk to me about work, you know, he says over and over again. I'm up to my eyeballs in dirt with work, with work. Who hasn't felt that way? Here's Lou Reed on Sound Opinions.
Don't Talk to Me About Work by Lou Reed on Sound Opinions, a perfect fit for this show's theme, even though we're talking a lot about work. For my next pick, Jim, I want to go with The Jam, who are one of those bands, as you said, who are chroniclers of the everyday in much the same manner as Lou Reed was. People talk about Paul Weller as being one of the great songwriters of his generation, inheriting the torch of Ray Davies and Pete Townsend and passing it on down the line to people like Morrissey. And Weller was certainly the voice in The Jam, the main songwriter, but his bassist and collaborator, Bruce Foxton, I think matched him on this particular song, and I think it is a great song about the common man and the laborer. Earlier I played an Animals song, which is talking about the blue-collar life. The Jam's Smithers Jones talks about the middle-class life, that sort of post-war Eisenhower America vision that was also true in England about, you know, the nice little home and the 9-to-5 job and the family with two kids. That was the dream of somebody who was raised in the middle class.
It's Mad Men, that show Mad Men.
Exactly. And what is it exactly that's being exacted here? What price is being paid? To my mind, what makes this song so powerful is not so much it's, oh, stick to that man, that lousy boss, he's going to keep the thumb on you. It's more about the poignance of this guy and the hopefulness and the sort of naive optimism that he has that, you know, I'm going to get that promotion and I want to work to get ahead. He's always a few minutes early for work and he's always on time when he's waiting at the tube stop to get picked up to go to work. And then yet the disappointment at the end that comes when he doesn't get what he wants and what does he have left. I think the personal details in the song are what make it work and I think make it a great song about the working life. Smithers Jones from The Jam on Sound Opinions.
Sitting on the train, you're nearly there. You're a part of the production line. You're the same as him, you're not in Southeast. Get out of the pack before they peel you back. I'm right at the office, spot on time. The clock on the wall has an extra night. Good morning, Smithers Jones. The boss wants to see you alone.
Smithers Jones from The Jam, that is actually the B-side version of the song, the stripped-down version. It appeared in a more orchestrated version on the Setting Suns record, but that's the original version of that song.
Digging deep, Mr. Cott. Always heard that Jam song as an attempt to rewrite the Kinks' David Watts.
There you go.
Similar vein of tunes. You were talking about how Bruce Foxton of The Jam was too polite to want to stick it to the boss. I am going to end our Labor Day special with a great song about sticking it to the boss. The last real rock and roll record that the Flaming Lips made was Clouds Taste Metallic before they became, you know, a circus act and a studio orchestra band. Bad Days is a song about,
you know, who among us, Greg, hasn't had that feeling you hate your boss at your job, right?
Yeah.
Wayne, I think, goes a little far, unusual for him in advocating violence. I think it's tongue-in-cheek. Usually he's all about hugging the plushies and you know, loving everybody, right? Singing happy birthday. But we've all been pushed there and have to bite our tongue sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Wayne Coyne of the Flaming Lips, the Oklahoma philosopher that he is, he has a solution. If you sleep late when you can, all your bad days will end. And isn't that true? You know, remember, this is what Labor Day weekend is all about. One final time of sleeping in, of doing nothing but laying around in the backyard, listening to fine tunes all weekend. And then Tuesday we go to work, okay? Here are the Flaming Lips with Bad Days from Clouds Taste Metallic on Sound Opinions.
In your dreams, show no mercy.
That wraps up our favorite songs about work. I think we could have gone on 20 times longer. A lot of songs out there about work. But as always, we want to hear from our listeners. Leave a voice message on our website, and we'll share it on the show.
I tell you, little buddy, this whole island is bewitched.
Just As often as possible, Greg or I like to take a trip to the desert island, pop a quarter in the jukebox, and play you a song we can't live without. Usually we're doing it these days as our bonus podcast, Greg, and we encourage people to check those out. But we have some time in the show this week, and what do you got for us?
Jim, I want to talk about a song of Lou Reed's that is experiencing a comeback. In fact, somebody else mentioned this to me the other day, and I thought it was really appropriate. He said, is Lou Reed having his hallelujah moment?
Well, we two Lou Reed songs in this episode.
Yeah. Al Green just did a cover of Perfect Day.
I heard it. Holy cow, is that amazing. Yes.
Al Green, who hasn't been heard from in a number of years.
Yeah,
right?
The Rev.
Great soul singer. I mean, glad to have Al back in any way he wants to be taken. And here he comes out with a cover of Lou Reed's Perfect Day. It's a little one-off. First new single in 5 years from Al Green.
Oh, yeah. Oh, perfect day. I'm glad I spent here with you. Such a perfect day. You just keep me hanging on. You just perfect day. Problems all left alone. Weekends on our own. It's such fun.
Of course, Lou's been dead for a number of years now, but I mean, that song has lived on. It's had multiple lives now. So the original appeared on his Transformer album, and it was overshadowed, by Walk on the Wild Side, right, and maybe even Satellite of Love, which was probably earlier, one of those songs that was covered by a number of artists.
Yeah, well, we heard U2 cover it once.
We did. It was great, too. Another one of my friends, Jim Higgins, who's written a book about the Velvet Underground that is awaiting publication, he reminded me that Lou Reed said more than once that Al Green was his favorite singer.
Yeah.
If you recall the Bell album by Al Green, Lou Reed, in fact, takes a bit of Take Me to the River in his song Teach the Gifted Children.
Mm.
There's a simpatico between the two artists, and it's come to fruition here in this incredible way. I think one of the reasons, or many reasons, is this song has lasted. First of all, in Trainspotting, it became a key element in the Trainspotting movie. The reason, because of that, here's this kind of romantic song written ostensibly about a day in the park, drinking sangria with the person I love, And so you're looking, this is just a romantic song. And then you realize there's a few lines in there. You go, okay, this is a little bit
It's Lou
deeper
Reed.
Than I thought it was going to be, as a great song should be. The ambiguity in the song has given it its life. So the reason it was used in Trainspotting was that it was seen as a song about heroin.
Yeah.
I'm in love with heroin. Just a perfect day, you made me forget myself. I thought I was someone else, someone good. That's a dark line. It also says, when I'm shooting this stuff up, I'm transformed.
Well, and it comes not long before Berlin, one of the darkest albums of all time.
Right. And then all those lines about you just keep me hanging on.
Right.
Is it a relationship with a woman? Is it a relationship with a drug? And then that outro, you're going to reap just what you sow.
Mm-hmm.
And I am reminded of the musician from Ukraine that we had on the show performing that song line by line and sending it out to the internet
in
to
the
remind
early days of the war.
His family and friends that he was still alive amid the Russian invasion.
And that was
of
his
Ukraine.
Message to Putin. You're going to reap what you sow.
So this song has multiple uses. I mean, the ambiguity of the song, as I said, has given it its lifespan. It's up there with something that Cole Porter might have written or Stephen Sondheim. It could be just one of those amazing songs that Lou Reed wrote and was initially kind of undervalued. Mick Ronson, by the way, playing the piano part on this song is just beautiful. This is the Bowie-produced record.
Right.
But Ronson really is all over it. He arranged the strings and then the piano part. But Lou's performance of it is magnificent. And here's Lou Reed with Perfect Day.
Just a perfect day. You made me forget myself. I thought I was someone else, someone good. Oh, it's such a perfect day. I'm glad I spent it with you. Oh, such a perfect day. You just keep me hanging on. You just keep me hanging on.
Perfect Day by Lou Reed, a great addition to the Desert Island Jukebox, Greg, and check out the Al Green cover, everybody, because that's amazing. What do we have on the show next week, Greg?
Next week, Chip, we're going to take a deep dive into the Paisley Underground, those great, that subculture of great psychedelic-influenced rock bands in the 80s. You know, Dream Syndicate, Rain Parade, amazing music, and now it's experiencing a bit of a renaissance. It's coming back.
It absolutely is.
And don't forget to check out our bonus podcast feed wherever you get your podcasts.
The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this program belong solely to Sound Opinions and not necessarily to Columbia College Chicago or our sponsors. Thanks, as always, to our Patreon supporters. Sound Opinions is produced by Andrew Gill, Alex Claiborne, and our associate producer, Sol Delgadillo. Our social media consultant is Katie Cott.